The psychedelic revolution is here. If you want to integrate your visionary experiences into your purpose, get clear on your entrepreneurial path, and help people while you do what you love, then this podcast is for you. Welcome to The Psychedelic Entrepreneur, Medicine for These Times. I'm your host, Beth Weinstein. I'm a spiritual business coach, three-time entrepreneur, and a lifelong student of psychedelics and sacred plant medicines. You carry your own unique medicine, and your medicine is what we need for these times. This podcast will help you to share your medicine so you can create transformation in the world. Listen in on conversations with psychedelic leaders, changemakers, and conscious entrepreneurs who are living proof that a better world is possible when you follow your heart and live in alignment with your soul. Hello, everyone. Welcome back to The Psychedelic Entrepreneur, Medicine for These Times. I am so excited to have here my friend and former client and peer working in the psychedelic space, Juliana Rose Goldstone. Hi, Juliana. Thank you for being here.
Hi, Beth. Thanks for having me on.
It's so good to have you, and I can't wait to dive into this topic. We were just kind of pre-chatting a little bit about this edgy topic that we're going to dive into today. But I'll tell you a little bit about Juliana and her work. So she is a certified somatic sex educator and trauma-informed plant medicine facilitator and integration coach. She works at the intersection of psychedelics, sexuality, and conscious relationship coaching. Name of her practice is called Boldly Embodied, and she believes that both psychedelics and sexuality can offer portals into how to live fully and boldly embodied in our relationship to self and others. She is passionate about creating ethical bridges between the psychedelic and sexuality spaces as a form of harm reduction. She offers private coaching and carefully curated programs for individuals, couples, and groups. And you can find out more about her work right here on her webpage here in the show notes. And I can't wait to dive into this because this area has been pretty big for me in my own path as well. And it's not been talked about much out there until very recently. So I would love to hear about your path. And, you know, full disclosure, Juliana was in my 12-month True Path Entrepreneur Mastermind program in 2022. But how did you get onto this path of, you know, helping people with sexuality or just even helping people in general? And I'm always curious, like, did you used to do something else totally different at one point?
So my journey around standing at this intersection of sexuality and psychedelics really started for me, way before I even started working in the sexuality space. I left home and went traveling through South America when I was 18, 19, met somebody there and ended up living in Peru for the better part of 5 or 6 years at a pretty young age. Now I was coming out of kind of the typical American, you know, education around drugs and substances and had, you know, not done any medicines at all. And had not moved to Peru. Oftentimes I tell people that I lived in Peru and it's like, oh, did you go there to do medicine work? And I actually lived in Peru for many, many years and didn't do medicine work until years later. But what I did receive there at that time as a pretty young person was just exposure to a culture that holds psychedelics, that holds entheogens, that holds, you know, medicine work sort of in the fabric of the culture, like, you know, mothers, children, fathers, grandparents, like people, it's woven into the art, it's woven into the storytelling. So that really shifted my sort of my paradigm of how to even interact or understand these medicines. So fast forward, you know, many years later, I was back in Peru after moving back to the States, and I was in an ayahuasca ceremony. I had separated from the father of my first child, my partner, who was from Peru at that time, and was with another partner, second baby. This is many years later. And I was in an ayahuasca ceremony, and it was pretty challenging. And what came forward to me after some, you know, challenging times and just being like getting my ass kicked by the medicine, I felt like she turned into this mama jaguar and just like held me down by the scruff of the neck and was like, all right, listen. Okay, I'm listening. And what came through for me really clearly was that my sexual trauma, you know, stuff that I, attachment trauma, even from a very young age, was really affecting how I was showing up in relationship, the relationship choices that I was making. And that up until that point, it was like this sort of trauma was in the driver's seat and I had not had my eyes on it yet. After that journey, it was very clear, like, oh, okay, this is what is kind of driving the bus, and I don't want it to be that way. So that really got me into studying deeply sexuality, which brought me to the study of somatic sex education, which, you know, to paraphrase, I feel is really like somatic experiencing for sex. It's really like slowing down the nervous system's response to arousal, the nervous system's response to being intimate with oneself or with another person, which we often kind of blow past, you know, in for so many reasons in so many ways. So I really, it was like boot camp for just understanding my own like internal workings of my sexuality and how I'm trying to meet these attachment needs that maybe weren't met when I was little, you know, through sex, and how that was rippling out into kind of the disastrous relationship situations that I kept on finding myself in. So that really, you know, it's only actually quite recently that I recognized and kind of connected those dots, like, oh, my sexual healing journey started in a medicine ceremony. But I didn't actually start talking about that crossover until, you know, in the last couple of years or so. So, you know, that's kind of how I got where I am. You know, I've worked with people primarily in the sexuality space, you know, doing the same kind of healing that I've done. Like, what happens when we really slow down and look at, you know, how do we feel in proximity to another nervous system? How do we then step into intimacy in that way? And that's why my practice is called Boldly Embodied, because it's like looking at the places where we tend to check out of our bodies, or we tend to dissociate, or we move on trauma autopilot. And, you know, recently the world's kind of started stitching themselves together kind of on their own. A lot of my sexuality clients were also doing medicine work, and started coming to me like, okay, can I talk to you about, you know, I had this huge sexual healing experience during a medicine journey, and I need to be to find someone to talk to about that. And nobody wants to talk about it. And I'm like, I'll talk about it. I have had certain similar experiences. So that's sort of where I am now, and kind of joyfully straddling this intersection of sexuality and psychedelics. And I think that there's so many ways that these modalities kind of share and cross-pollinate. And I'm excited to be a part of that conversation as it unfolds.
So Juliana, thank you so much for sharing that. And I, you know, first of all, I want to acknowledge this incredibly edgy work you're doing in the medicine space around with sexual trauma, sexual energy, sexual healing. It's so interesting because this is the primary driving life force on the entire planet, right? And we as a society have been so opposed to talking about sexuality. It's kind of like the, you know, it's one of the biggest traumas out there in so many people's lives. And then we're all afraid to talk about it. Thankfully, that's changing a little bit. I think over the years, as more and more people come out and start to talk about it and are also doing this kind of healing work, you know, it's time to change these conversations. So, and I do want to share that my own medicine journey was really affected by, or like overall medicine path has been affected by some deep familial sexual trauma that happened to, you know, my mom and not me, not that I know of, thank God. But, you know, and I used to think, oh, this isn't mine to deal with. That would just happen to my mom. But wow, when I started working with ayahuasca, it became very clear that I was carrying so much of this. And when I started really diving into that and doing that work, that's where like the real healing started happening. And of course, you know, there's very few people to even talk to about this sexual work, you know, who understands the ayahuasca path or the plant medicine path or any kind of psychedelic path. And sexual trauma and sexual, you know, healing of the trauma. So I also, I would love to ask, you know, like when you made this kind of, because you were already doing all this, this amazing work in the sexual healing space. And then, you know, when you came to my program, I remember I was like, oh, I could see it. You know, like I always see the visions of my clients before, on some level, before they embody it themselves. And I remember it was a little challenging to come out, right, to kind of own this path you're on, like own the fact that this is like your zone of genius. You want to help people with this. You have all this training. You've had years of experience. Can I ask, like, you know, how has that journey been for you coming out as this, you know, like owning yourself as an expert with sexual healing and psychedelics? It's like you're double whammying the edginess right here. And a lot of people are probably like, whoa, she's super courageous. But yeah, what can you talk about that journey, like just even coming out of the closet and with both?
Yeah. Yeah, it's, you said it, the double whammy of edginess. It's funny, when I first started studying as a somatic sex educator, we created this anthology called Healers on the Edge. And I was just talking to one of my mentors and teachers, and she's like, you should write another one called Healers on the Edgier Edge, because I'm just like scooting up on the edge here. Yeah, I mean, I feel like before your program, that's probably the main growth that I experienced was just owning it, just talking about it, feeling less and less afraid of talking about it, feeling like, oh, okay, no one's like beating down my door. I talked about it once. I talked about it twice. You know, I think there's this real like witch wound, for lack of a better word, of like, okay, what has happened, you know, in the past when we witches, we women have like spoken out and shared our medicine. And so I think there's been a lot of just repatterning of that kind of deep like body fear around claiming my medicine, which does happen to be in an edgy place for this society at this time. I don't think it's always been that way. I think there were times in societies where this was like right nestled up into the fabric of life. But here I am at this time in this place, and it's a little bit more challenging.
Thanks for sharing. And yeah, maybe it is time for that book, you know, like the edgier, edgy. But it's interesting, you know, since working with you in my program, and actually one of my former clients is also kind of bridging into this area. I have a current client who's kind of actually a couple current clients who are not so much like just sexuality, but like couples work and in relationship and going, which of course, you know, bridges into sexuality, but in the medicine space. And it's definitely coming up in conversation more and more because, you know, relationship is like, it's like one of the number one most human basic needs and ways of being. Like we're always in relation to one another. So we can't really deny that, you know, then there's people that are working with medicines and psychedelics as couples or individually, but in a relationship. And this is a topic that really needs to be talked about and explored more and more because, you know, again, like I've seen relationships break up, or I've seen people go in totally different directions, or things come to surface during these psychedelic experiences. And then now a couple doesn't know how to even handle it or what to do. I'm curious, you know, you do couples work as well as the, you know, this sexual healing work. You know, like what have you seen is kind of like the main, or if there's any like themes that come up with couples who are on the medicine path or who are stepping into psychedelics right now? Like, what do you feel like they should know? Or what's like the theme that comes up in their work?
The question that you asked me is the exact reason that I created the program that I do now. And I sort of broke that program up into four sort of main themes that I see come up over and over and over again. And places where I see couples get stuck, and places, you know, with or without medicine work, where I often see relationships start to deteriorate. I think medicine work can enhance or catalyze what's already happening. So sometimes if a relationship is really needing to change forms or come apart, like medicine work can, you know, make quick work of that. And sometimes that's beautiful. You know, that's what needs to happen, because we could spend a lot of years being pretty miserable trying to deny what's actually happening. Sometimes, you know, medicine work can help couples to really peer through the veil and really see what they actually want and make some changes. So my program kind of walks people through these four areas over the course of a year, where like by the end of it, I mean, we've just really like gone into all of the little nitty gritty workings of their relationship. And if they are on the medicine path already, maybe they're going to, you know, Peru to do medicine work, or maybe they, you know, take MDMA in their living room or whatever they're doing, then they can sort of plug their journey work into this framework. So the four themes that I've seen is the first one, and I kind of created it like a medicine wheel. So we start in the East, which is the, you know, the energy, the direction of visioning. And we just start into like, what do you even believe is possible for your relationship? Are you playing out scripts that, you know, you witnessed your parents do, or you're playing out society's script for, you know, what society says a relationship can be? But what do you actually in your heart, in your body, believe to be possible for you and this relationship and for a relationship in general? And that's often a place where we start to look into like, okay, who even taught us about relationships? You know, did we watch a lot of I Love Lucy when we were little, or did we, you know, were our parents always fighting? Was there a lot of like disdain and not very much honoring and respect between our parents being modeled? So we go into that, and it's, you know, it's a big question. And then we kind of move around. So that's the East. Then we go to the South, which is about sexuality. So that's when we really go into like, okay, sex is a vehicle for expressing our, you know, the highest vision of our relationship. What's going on in the sexual realm? You know, are there power dynamics that aren't being addressed? Is somebody kinky and afraid to ask for what they want? Is somebody, you know, checking out during sex or feeling, you know, dealing with sexual trauma? So then we really just go into the sexual sphere during that portion of the program. And it really runs throughout, you know, it's a thread that runs throughout, but I think it's important to take time to really look at it and kind of dissect it and take it apart. So then we go down into the West. West is about ceremony. It's about rites of passage. It's about looking at the entire arc of this relationship and looking at like, what are the missed rites of passage? Like, did you become parents? Did you acknowledge like everything that changed, everything that you needed to grieve and let go of, everything that came in that you're welcoming and celebrating? Did you move houses? Did you change jobs? Like, there are all these, you know, every relationship is many relationships all bundled into one. And so I think relationships often deteriorate because we don't acknowledge the rites of passage. You know, in our culture, we get one rite of passage, maybe, if we choose that, and that's a wedding, you know, and that's it. And it's like, there's so much more. There's so much more there to like relook at the commitments that we're making and relook at, you know, how has everybody changed? And hopefully everyone in the relationship is evolving separately as individuals, and also the relationship is evolving and growing. So that's hanging out in the West. You know, we look at like, what are the rites of passage? What are the missed or unacknowledged ceremonies that need to happen? And kind of where are you in the season of your relationship, right? Are you just starting? You've been together for 35 years. There's so much there. And we also look at relationship agreements. You know, are you polyamorous? Are you monogamous? Are you wanting to sort of shift? So that's all in the West. Then we get around to the North. The North is about ancestors. It's about, you know, looking at attachment. It's about our attachment traumas. It's about looking at our ancestral like inheritances around all of the stuff that we just spent the last almost year in, around sex, around relationship, around, you know, gosh, there's so many ways that we play out the epigenetics of relationship without even realizing. So that sort of finishes up the year of kind of bringing it all around. And I feel like it's almost like it goes full circle. Like, we end kind of where we began, which is like, who taught us about relationship? What new information do we have now? What visions do we have for the next cycle with all of this information that we just spent the whole year kind of gathering? So that was a long answer to your question. Those are the four realms and the four themes that I really see come up.
Ah, no, it's amazing. This is beautiful work. And I love that it's in the medicine wheel. And you address so many important areas that I think, you know, a lot of people don't even know about. You know, it's like, it's so unconscious for so many people, like these patternings that we develop, or the models, and then, like, you know, we embody it. And then you mentioned the epigenetics, which, you know, again, I used to be one that believed in epigenetics, except for this one area. You know, it was like, I was in full denial, because I just thought, like, oh, well, that wouldn't affect me. And when I realized that it was not only affecting me, it was like really in the way of a lot of things. And with the medicine work and integration work, and working with someone who understood the somatics and sexual trauma, like on this kind of level, that's when the healing really started. I'm curious, you know, when you're working with couples in this program, where do the psychedelics come in? Is it more like, hey, you guys are already doing it, and this is how you can bring intention in? Or is it more like, take some MDMA and you'll figure it all out? You know, like, I'm always curious. How do you advise couples to even work with medicines, like together or even separate? And, like, you know, how is it different than just like me going and taking mushrooms in a ceremony or something?
So I really see this whole container as kind of an integration container. It's a framework to plug in the journey work that they're doing. Most couples that find me are already on the medicine path in one way or the other. It's not really a program for couples who are like, we're totally new. That being said, I have actually had couples who, they want to work with the psychedelics of erotic energy. They want to work maybe with cacao. Maybe they have a cannabis practice going on already. So I think there's lots of ways that this can be plugged in. But for the most part, through each segment of the medicine wheel, we're also looking at helping them prepare for a journey. So generally, there's an invitation for a couple to do on their own 4 journeys throughout the year that are prepared for, integrated. And the medicine that they use, in some ways, like, obviously different medicines hold different energies, and, you know, we work with different ones for different reasons, but it's also a lot about the intention and how it's integrated. So for a couple who grows their own mushrooms and that's the medicine they have access to and that's what they want to use, they will use mushrooms throughout the whole year. You know, for couples who have an affinity with MDMA and that's what they're working with, then we'll work with that. But I think it's really more of an integration framework for people that are on the medicine path in one way or the other. You know, I've had a couple who was going to Jamaica to do a retreat, and that was one of their journeys. And, you know, we worked with how to prepare and integrate, you know, the journey that they had there, and sort of give them a framework to, like, land what came up.
Beautiful. You know, I'm sitting here, and actually it's funny, I just interviewed my other friends who do couples work with psychedelics, kind of in a different but somewhat similar capacity, less focused on sexuality. But I'm always curious about this question of, because who is it? Charlie Wieninger, right? Who's written the book about listening to ecstasy, who, I don't know if I'm, this is probably not quoting him verbatim, but he has said something like, MDMA, like, saved our marriage, essentially. And they've been married for 25 or 30 years, something like big like that. Something, let's say, abnormal. Unfortunately, at least here in the US and the West where we live, it is very normal to, you know, my family, like most people around me, come from divorced parents or broken families, or, you know, not great models of relationships. And it's become like very prevalent in the US to have relationships just like not work out. I'm curious, you know, do you feel that this growth in psychedelics and now MDMA potentially becoming legalized for therapy in the next year and a half, as they're saying, or year even, do you think that this is going to, like, change? Like, do you think that psychedelics really could help save people's relationships? Like, do you think that's, I mean, it's kind of a big thing to say, like, yes, psychedelics could essentially, like, help people figure it out. But do you think there's something big here with psychedelics and relationships?
Yeah, I do. I think that there's something huge here with psychedelics and relationships, because who we are as a person is who we bring to our relationship. So whether you're doing psychedelics for your own personal growth, that's going to affect the relationship. You know, I don't believe that failure means breaking up. Sometimes that's the most successful thing to do. You know, sometimes success is recognizing like, okay, this way of being together has played out its course. It doesn't mean it was a mistake. It doesn't mean it was bad, but we're moving on to something else. We're still in relationship. You know, some of the most beautiful sessions that I have with people are when they are reframing a breakup. Instead of it being a failed marriage, instead of it being a failed relationship, or, you know, now we're going to have a broken family, it's like, oh, we still are a family. We just don't want to sleep in the same bed anymore. We're still a family. We just don't want to, you know, live in the same house anymore, but we can thrive that way. And we can raise our children with so much more love than we were able to holding on to this one definition that our society gives us for what a relationship is. And so I think it's, you know, Esther Perel, who I just adore, she says all the time, like, there was never so much pressure on whether two people want to continue having sex with each other for their whole life. And now an entire family dissolves because two people are like, I don't think I want to have sex with you anymore, which is actually very human and natural and normal in many ways for us to go through these cycles. And it used to be that, you know, a relationship was nested within a village, within a tribe, and the family, you know, the children, it didn't change the children's experience that much. Now it does. So I think that the it's really about expanding our definition of what success looks like. And, you know, psychedelics are all about expanding our vision of what we think is true and what we think is possible.
Yeah, it's, I agree with this. It's like a whole new paradigm of how to look at this. And I agree. It's funny because I come from a divorced family. And at the beginning, it was kind of traumatic. You know, it was like, oh, my God, this loss and the whole breakup. And then by the end of when my dad finally left, it was like, oh, thank God. You know, like, oh, I'm so glad they're breaking up because it was just – it was a lot for the whole family. And I actually just went through a breakup myself where it was like – now it's this whole new beautiful friendship and it's like exciting. And yeah, there's definitely a beautiful way of reframing it. And I'm so glad you're teaching this because I do think, you know, this kind of world that we're stepping into and witnessing emerge right now is really this way of seeing things differently. Like, how can this be done different? And, you know, maybe psychedelics with the expansion of our understanding of how we work and how our patterns have been running the show and our traumas and this, you know, like you mentioned, the epigenetics, like these energies that are even in our ancestry and how they're running us. Like, the more we can become aware of all this and become conscious of it, the more there's this opportunity for understanding one another, for healing, for growth. You know, it's just so fascinating and interesting. But I want to shift gears and ask you a little bit about sexuality and sexual healing and sexual trauma in the psychedelic world, because it's interesting. You know, you're out there talking about, you know, sexual trauma and sexual healing and relationships, and both me and you understand how these medicines and these psychedelics can actually help heal it. I mean, I have, you know, again, like, profound stories. And I've talked to others, and of course, there's others out there that have shared their stories of healing trauma through these medicine spaces or doing medicine work. But then there's the other side, which is like, you know, there's been reports of people experiencing trauma in the medicine space or facilitators who are not informed about, you know, or not properly informed about sexual energy and sexual trauma, and which I do believe is an area that I think at this point, everybody who's holding psychedelic space needs to understand this, because it's what are they? I think there's actual statistics that say like 1 out of every 4 people have had sexual abuse. It's probably more than that, really. But I'm curious, like, what are your views on like working in this, the psychedelic space as, let's say, a therapist or a space holder or, you know, a facilitator, and dealing with this sexual trauma that might surface? Like, any opinions on all this or words about this?
Yeah, so many. You know, I think I have a really unique perspective on this, having dedicated so much of my life to ethical practice within the sexuality space, which is really nitty gritty work, because you are, you know, people come to you with all sorts of transference and all sorts of stuff that they want to, they want you to do for them or hold for them or be for them. And so I've spent, you know, the last many years of my life really going into these nuances of how to be in an intimacy space with somebody without allowing that transference, without, you know, taking their power away. You know, one of the models that we study in the somatic sex education model is The Wheel of Consent by Dr. Betty Martin. And I think there are so many ways. I mean, I think every single practitioner, especially in places where you are holding space for people in really vulnerable states, so the sexuality space and the psychedelic space, should have an understanding of the Wheel of Consent. Because the question that it asks is, who is this interaction for at any time, whatever it is? And I think where we get sticky and where it gets tricky for practitioners, if we have unhealed stuff around how, you know, nobody ever listened to us, nobody thought we were important, and now we're holding this place of power, we step into a session with somebody and really we're trying to get our own needs met through them, which is absolutely not the way that this energy needs to move. And, you know, there's a reason why sexuality is a place where we either trespass or we experience trespass, because it's like you're tapping right into someone's personal power when you mess with their sexuality. And I think that if we as practitioners don't have a really clear and well-rounded understanding of our own sexual traumas, of our own, you know, shadow areas in our sexuality, and if we don't have an understanding of power dynamics and how that might look, and understanding that we are in a place of power and how to really hold that ethically, then there's a lot of ways that we can cause harm. So I'm really passionate about building these ethical bridges between, because I think there's so much fear that for a while, like, we don't even talk about sexuality in the psychedelic space because there's been so much harm perpetuated, and vice versa in the sexuality space. Oh no, this is all sober space. We don't talk about psychedelics. We don't do psychedelics here. Because there's so much fear that once we get into that nitty gritty area between the two, that there's going to be harm, which is, it's a good thing to fear. It's a good, you know, we need to be aware of that. But I think that there's, like, it's time to step up the game as practitioners in terms of just turning the mirror around and looking at ourselves. And I think that somatic sex education, for me, I see it as a harm reduction model in the psychedelic space of, like, okay, how do we continue to cultivate practitioners who have a really deep, good understanding of their own sexual shadows and of their partner or of their clients? Because if a client comes in with a lot of sexual trauma and that is played out by fawning, that might feel really good to you as a practitioner. But if you don't have the lens to be like, oh, I see this person as in a trauma response, they're just telling me what I want to hear, they're like going belly up. If I don't have a sense of that and that feeds right into my, like, oh, this feels really good because nobody ever listened to me when I was a kid, then we have, like, a big problem.
I'm so glad you named this because, I mean, we see it all the time, especially, you know, in this, exactly as you said, like, people are in a position of power. It's, you know, whether it's conscious or unconscious, if they haven't done their own work to even understand their own trauma responses and their own patternings, like, of course, you know, yeah, like you mentioned the word transference, which, by the way, everybody, like, please look that up and understand what it is, because it's, you know, again, like, if it's happening to you or you're transferring on one another, you know, someone you're working with, we need to really understand and, like, keep ourselves in check and do this work and do the education and do our own, like you said, the shadow work within ourselves. And I speak ourselves as in, like, everybody who's in this position of transformation, coaching, healing, facilitation, therapy. It's like, it kind of is, we're at the point where, like, this should be standard training for everybody. So this includes people who feel like, oh, I want to just start giving mushrooms to my friends and holding space. It's like I'm assuming you've done mushroom doses and know what this can bring up. And if you get into this kind of, you said, like these sticky situations, this can really go downhill. And it's interesting because being in the psychedelic space for so long, there has definitely been some very public incidents over the last few years. And these are the ones that are just public, which means we all know there's many that are not public that are happening left and right, because it's the reality. It's like we're all human. Sexual energy is like the biggest, most, what's the right word? Like it's the biggest life, you know, it's our life force. It's this like huge energy. And if we don't really understand how it works and to be in touch with it, like it can be misused in so many ways, like you said, personal power. So this is like one of the areas I personally feel that all facilitators should be educated in, because it's bound to come up on some level, whether you're conscious of it or not. But yeah, with these very public sticky situations, because Juliana and I before the interview were talking about one in particular where, you know, well-known facilitator of psychedelics had an accusation come out a while ago. And, you know, there were some arguments over, like, what do we do with these accusations? Like, because we're going to see them more and more. I mean, there's been many in, like, just the last few years. And, you know, Juliana, I'm curious what you think of the best way we can approach this. Because, of course, I've seen all different ways of this being handled. I've seen them get totally canceled and, like, shunned off the internet completely. And then I've seen some step forward and take ownership and use it as an opportunity for their own healing. I've seen, you know, people like sweep it under and kind of just like pretend it doesn't exist and keep continuing with their work. Like, you know, it's like, I'm curious what you think of how this could be handled by, let's say, a facilitator, whether it goes public or not. You know, like how do you recommend that someone handle like a situation that might come up?
Yeah, I mean, it's a good question, and I don't necessarily have the answer. What I do know is that just straight out canceling, I don't think that gives anybody an opportunity to grow. And growth might look like, you know what, I should not be holding medicine ceremonies. That's a totally valid way of growing. You know, and it's tricky because we don't necessarily want to pour energy into abusers and, you know, like give them all of these chances if they're going to continue abusing people. But I do think that there's a nuance, you know, calling people in and having structures. And this is the tricky part about, and hopefully this will change as psychedelics, you know, become legalized in more places, as well as, you know, sex work. I identify as a sex worker because I work with sex. You know, I'm not having sex with my clients, but, you know, I feel like it's also a solidarity piece because we, you know, there's a lot of division in the sexuality space. Well, I'm not a sex worker. Like, yeah, I am. I work with sex. I'm a sex worker. I can stand in solidarity with sex workers. And one thing that I think this, you know, sexuality and psychedelic spaces have in common is because they have been illegal, there isn't, there's no accountability structures. We can't go to the authorities and talk to people. People are afraid of getting, you know, prosecuted for coming forward about something. People are afraid to seek help or accountability because it's scary to do that, you know, in a space that's not fully legal. So I think a lot of it has to do with just, you know, access and legality. And I hope that that's going to change over the next few years where we can have more open discussions about it and, you know, more out loud frameworks for accountability, you know, going forward. There is one, a woman that I'm in a couple of circles with just started. It's called EPIC, E-P-I-C. And she's with a group of people. And I forget what it's an acronym for something, but it's all about creating like ethical frameworks for people and talking about the ethics of psychedelic work. So I'm excited to see where that goes. I've got my finger on that one, and I might offer some, you know, some consulting or some ideas about sex and how important it is to have that conversation as well.
Ah, wow. That's, yeah. And you said it right there is that, first of all, it's these both areas have been illegal, right? And psychedelics, everybody forgets, even though it's happening everywhere, it is still considered underground for the most part. And you're right, there is no accountability. I know there's the North Star Pledge, and there's a lot of people working towards these like code of ethics. I think Chakruna has a code of ethics for plant medicine work. But even then, yeah, it's like, it is this kind of scary space of like, well, something happened to me, but if I tell, then I'm going to get in trouble or get them in trouble. And it's this kind of sticky, fine line, but I'm so glad you used the term, calling them in, calling people forward. You know, that's what I believe as well, where I don't believe that just canceling someone who does something wrong is like the answer, because we have to have transparent discussions and learn and grow and establish ethics and boundaries and also education. You know, this is why we do these podcasts. This is why we have these talks, for people to make, you know, really informed decisions and be discerning and to really know their own boundaries and also do a lot of due diligence when it comes to facilitators. You know, if you're, if you already know you have a lot of deep sexual trauma that you want to work out in a psychedelic space, like, you know, that's where it's like, well, maybe it's worth having an open talk with the facilitator or therapist, or searching for someone who literally specializes in this so that you have the right support. Because, you know, if not, it can actually, we all know, like, re-traumatization is a real thing, and it can potentially make things even worse. So I'm so glad you're doing this work and so well informed about this. I do. So Juliana knows, when she joined my mastermind program last year, I was like, yes, this is where it's at. Like, this is one area in the psychedelic space that I've always believed needs to be talked about, and it needs its own niche. You know, it's like, we're going to see more and more of these smaller, like more refined facilitators and educators and integration coaches within specific realms that are handling, you know, like sexuality or eating disorders or addiction or, you know, certain recovery, you know, to cater to a person who's really like spent their life struggling with this. So I'm so glad you're doing this and really finally completely out of the closet with your, you know, sexual and psychedelic work. I'm curious, you know, I want to ask you a couple questions about being on this entrepreneurial path. I mean, I know you were already an entrepreneur, but, you know, the last year, year and a half of really coming out, you know, I saw you go from like just kind of like exploring this a little bit to literally speaking at a conference, you know, like, which I was like, whoa, it's amazing how fast you moved in this business. Like, you just embodied it. It's like, you know, there you go, boldly embodied your own medicine here. But yeah, what would you say to someone who's, you know, kind of where you were at a year and a half ago, where you're like starting to know what you're here to do, but you're scared or not clear or not sure, you know, like, any recommendations for others listening that are kind of maybe where you were a year and a half, 2 years ago?
Yeah. I mean, I think the biggest pieces that came together for me was that my entire life has been preparing me to do this work. You know, everything, all the traumas that I experienced, all of the times that I thought I was off track or that I was, you know, doing something else that wasn't part of this, like, it was all part of it. And like you just said, you know, my medicine is my medicine for me too. Sometimes I forget that. Sometimes, you know, I get so caught up in serving others that I forget that actually, like, it's the medicine I need too. You know, I'm still working on, you know, unwinding this trauma and my sexuality and my, you know, relationships, and it's an ongoing thing. So I think what I would say to people is just, you probably have been preparing for this your whole life. You probably have so many more tools than you think. And it's just about stepping out and claiming that. And sometimes, you know, we can get stuck on like claiming a title or claiming a niche, but it's like, I'm me and this is my lived experience. And that is really the medicine that we have to offer.
Oh, you said it right there. I'm like, it's not a niche. It's not about like choosing, you know, and I'm sure you heard me say this during the mastermind, because I always end up saying it multiple times in the program. I'm like, people can throw away titles, really, like on some level, because it is just you and your embodied self. And like you said, our whole entire life journey, all the ups and downs, it's the typical wounded healer. Like, we are all wounded healers on some level. You know, if we're here to help serve others in some capacity and in the healing realm, you know, we had to have had our own journey. And it's like that depth of self-love and self-compassion, of really owning all of our soul's journey, including the biggest of worst, you know. Like, for me, it was like, I don't even like to use the word failure because I don't believe there is such a thing. But, you know, like my quote failure of my previous business was like the best thing that ever happened to then be able to serve my clients now in growing their businesses, you know. And it's like that same thing is like your own journey into your own healing and your own integration and all the work that really has lit you up the most has brought you to this place of being able to serve. And I'm so happy because to witness your growth, I mean, you literally seem like a different person now. I know there's been a lot of your own like integration work and inner work as well, of course, because it's all intertwined. We can't just grow a business without working on our own personal development. But to see you go from like kind of like, hey, is this a thing? Like, can I really do this? To being like, I'm speaking at a mushroom conference. Like, and I've seen you launch group programs and, you know, mother programs. It's just been incredible to watch you really blossom in this space. And I know you've heard me say this as well. And I remind all my clients, especially the ones in psychedelics and kind of edgy other areas, I always say you have to remember you're just at the beginning. Like, this is just only just beginning. You're a pioneer. This is all very new. And while it might be like super edgy, you know, in 2021, give it a couple years, you're going to be like overloaded with clients. Like, you know, you're going to probably have to like expand and hire and, you know, who knows, maybe create your own training program or something. Just kind of dropping that seed here. But Juliana, I want to give you a few minutes to share about your actual programs and your offers. I know you shared the one with the medicine wheel, but yeah, tell us like what it is you're up to and what's kind of on the plate for your future journey in the next like 6 to 12 months. I'm curious.
Yeah. So my couples program is open. It is always open. It's a really individualized program I shouldn't say it's always open. It's open right now. Yeah. Who knows? Who knows? But right now, that's a one-on-one coaching program. So it's not a group, but it's, you know, it's rolling admission. It is me, you know, and the couple. I also have monthly couples integration circles that are free or by donation. That's the fourth Tuesday of every month. And so that's just my offering to keep these conversations open. Like, what, you know, what are the unique joys and challenges of being on the medicine path with your partner? And those are always just really sweet, lovely groups of people coming in with all different kinds of questions, you know, on all different places on the medicine path. Some people are just starting out. Some people haven't even done anything at all and are just wondering if it's a good fit for them to work with medicines with their partner. Some people have been, you know, doing medicine together for 30 years. So there's the whole spectrum. So that's one of my offerings. And then I have an offering for mamas that I'm feeling really excited about, because so often when I work with couples, oftentimes when couples come to me, they're parents, and oftentimes it's the mother kind of initiating the change that needs to happen. So I opened this group called Entheo Mama, which I got really excited about this name. I made shirts. I made t-shirts. Oh. I have a whole merch thing going on for it now because I just really liked it. So that was my late night project last night, actually. And so this program is a 5-week program. There's going to be, you know, and it kind of weaves together the work that I have been doing for many years around sexuality and mothering. You know, how do we not lose our life force? How do we not lose connection with our pleasure and our sexuality as a mother? And why is that actually so, 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 so important to stay connected with especially as mothers, because we need access to all of our life force. But I'm layering on a component of psychedelic education as well. So we're going to be getting into microdosing protocols, you know, the microdosing protocol that I've been using for years as a very busy single entrepreneur mom, because so many moms are like, I'd love to microdose, but I can't. I'm a mom. And it's like, oh, no, you can. And actually, this is the time to do it. So we're going to get into microdosing practice, talk about sexuality and pleasure and how psychedelics can keep us connected to those very important parts of ourselves as moms. And it's going to be a really sweet group. It's going to be small, only about 10 or 11 people max to start out. And I think already the group that's forming is very sweet. So that starts November 21st. So this is perfect timing. And those are the two programs that I have going on. I also do ongoing preparation and integration work. Psychedelic preparation integration work. So, you know, people that want to integrate an experience that they've had or prepare for an experience that they're going to have somewhere else, I offer that as well as somatic sex, you know, online somatic sex education for couples and individuals, which can have nothing to do with psychedelics or something to do with psychedelics, you know. So there's sort of, those are the intersections that I'm at right now.
Amazing. I love it. And congratulations on all your offerings. And I absolutely love the t-shirt idea, by the way. That's so cool. I could see that becoming a whole movement. Especially since this, I haven't actually, I'll admit, I haven't read the article that went viral the other week about psychedelic moms, like the microdosing moms article, whatever, maybe there were more than one. I don't know. I can't even keep up with it, but we do know that, you know, hey, now the mass media is talking about moms microdosing and, you know, this work is just getting out there more and more. So Juliana, thank you so much for being here and being a psychedelic pioneer and doing this incredibly beautiful healing work that you're doing. I think, you know, again, this has been so dear to my own path and my own healing journey that, you know, I think when I first met you, I was just like, whoa, yeah. Like, I wish I had had this 10 years ago. It was, you know, I got lucky that I found a somatic therapist that understood what was happening. But man, when that first came up, like, it was probably to this day one of my most intense moments in a ceremony, and I will never forget it because it was like, just bam, like, oh my God, now I'm super clear on all this deep sexual trauma that needs to, you know, have the attention put into it. And I am so grateful for the medicine and for this path to, you know, help me heal this and for the work that you're doing to help people heal and expand and grow and have beautiful relationships. This gives me so much hope for the future. So thank you so much for being here.
Thank you so much, Beth. It's been really wonderful speaking with you.
Aw. And everybody, you know, if you enjoyed this episode, I just want to remind you, please share it with your friends, share it around, leave a positive review or any kind of review. And we greatly appreciate you listening and being here. Thank you for sharing your unique medicine. Your medicine is what we need for these times. I hope you enjoyed the episode. If you're feeling inspired, I'd appreciate it if you showed your love with a review. And check out my YouTube channel where you can find the video version of this podcast. You can also head to bethaweinstein.com to learn more about me and grab my free business growth trainings. Remember, you carry your own unique medicine, and your medicine is what we need for these times.